Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Oh, are ya? Welcome back. This week's podcast is for everyone, young and old. Please pass it on to young people in your life because we've got the sexperts in straight from the brook talking to us about porn, about child grooming and how it's actually happening in our city, body image, healthy sexual relationships, and they even try and dispel the myths that, let's be honest, we all believed at some point. Two words, blue waffle. Enjoy.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Not often, I guess, experts in the studio to talk about sex with me. I'm 38, you'd think I'd have a clue. I like to think I'm pretty good at it, but, you know, there's always things you can learn.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you heard the podcast, and just let everybody know what you messaged me.
So, a message just saying that I loved it. It was nice to have two women talking about it. I don't think that contraception and sex is talked about enough, especially by women. But there's like all these myths around the brook. There's myths about contraception, smears. And sometimes you just need to have a good chat with somebody who works in that field who can kind of dispel all the rumours that you read or you hear or what your mate said and stuff like
that's
that.
That's right. Now, this podcast is for all ages.
Yeah.
So I want people to be listening to this and thinking, I know exactly what I'm going to tell my kids now.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you go through life believing things that aren't actually true. Or you can be listening to it as an older lady wanting to look at different ways to stop yourself getting pregnant now that you've got kids. Or you could be a 14-year-old male or female listening into this wanting to know exactly what they need to know to get through the next couple of years of their lives. So tell me, first of all, we've got Imogen and Lucy. Lucy, what's your job?
So I'm an education worker at Brook, so my title's education and wellbeing specialist, which makes me sound a lot more posh than I am.
Doesn't it? That is like really
basically,
fancy.
Basically, my job is to like go into schools, colleges, universities, youth clubs, basically anywhere where there's young people who are under the age of 25, talk to them about relationships, about sex, about their sexual health, and other things like body image, healthy relationships, mental health and stuff like that, because it all feeds in together to help young people understand like what a healthy relationship is and what impact that might have on their lives.
Because lives can take a totally different turn, can't they, once your body starts changing, depending on the environment and the people you've got around you, whether it's educating you or just making you feel like you're not the only one going through these changes, having these feelings, or just supporting anything you can say out loud and not make you feel different or weird or strange. That's just like a godsend, isn't it, to have someone, you know, like that around to speak to. And if you're not lucky enough to have that in the family home, it's places like the Brook that then have to pick up the slack, really. So Imogen, what do you do? What's your job?
So I work in clinics. So I see patients for everything, really. So to talk about contraception, sexual health testing, pregnancy testing, just to have a chat. Sometimes they just come in just for a little chat with us.
So in the Brook, it's up to the age of 25.
Yeah.
That's right. So you're the lady who pops her head out the door when you've got your raffle ticket.
And
you're waiting to go in and say either something really embarrassing or, you know, you're with your mate and you're supporting your mate because something's gone wrong or whatever it may be. And for the first time, I think, you feel like an adult in the Brook.
Yeah, definitely.
No matter how old you are, it's that first experience of, I'm responsible for this whole body of mine. So you've gone from, you know, your mum and dad doing everything for you to, this is on me now. And if I fuck it up, it could end really badly, you know. So talk me through, first of all, some of the funniest things you've heard. And I bet it's not just from the youngest of people who come in.
Definitely not.
Give me some examples, go on, that's going to make us all laugh.
Okay, so whenever we do like a big event in school, we always have like, you know, a really sort of open forum for everybody to talk to us about all of these things. So we hear so much from young people. We also hear it from like teachers, staff and like other adults and stuff as well. So it definitely isn't just young people who think these things.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ones is that everybody seems to think that you can't get a sexually transmitted infection if you go for a wee after you've had sex.
What?
Yeah.
You just flush it away.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's clearly not true.
That must be horrifying for the professionals.
Yeah.
to hear when you're, you know, most of your day is taken up making sure people understand what's going on. So, okay, if you do catch an infection, it's not going to go away once you have a wee.
Absolutely not.
We know that. Anything else?
You can't get pregnant if you do it standing up.
That's been going back for time, that one, hasn't it? Yeah. The other one, what's the other one? Oh, if you did it in the bath.
Yeah, I don't know where that one came from either. The standing up one I can get because of gravity. I think that's where it stemmed from.
It's funny because, you know, even like when I was trying for a baby, I think I was 28 when I had Joseph and I got pregnant really quickly. And so we only really tried for 3 weeks, I think, much to my husband's, you know, disappointment. And I can remember with both of mine, because both of them were planned, doing the opposite, putting my feet over my head, almost doing like a headstand on the bed. And as much as I thought in my head, is this even making a difference? I needed to do it for my own mental health at the time, that I was doing everything I could to make sure I was getting pregnant. So, yeah, you can see that if you're standing the other way, it's going to fall out and not make it to the eggs. But vice versa, as a 28-year-old, I was still clutching at straws, like, I'll do the other way and let them all run to my eggs. Go hatch.
Yeah, that's it. And I think when young people, I definitely say that over the years, they've got a bit less wild, the things that people come out with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're a young person thinking that and you haven't been educated to the point that you know that standing up isn't a form of contraception, that if you've relied on that, then, you know, it's not going to end in tears.
Really. Yeah, definitely. So, okay, you're getting people coming through the doors all the time with these different things.
Yeah.
There must have been times, as much as this is a podcast I want people to laugh about, there must be times when you felt completely lost for words. You know, things that come through your door, obviously without naming names, no one wants that. But can you give us some scenarios that you have to deal with that can maybe make you come away from work thinking, oh, this is a stressful job?
So we obviously, because of what we talk about, what are the nature of our job, we deal with young people sometimes who aren't in the best environments and not hanging around with the best people. I think most people probably by now have heard of child sex exploitation.
Yes.
So thankfully we don't get as much as I think the press would like people to think is going on, but we still do get that. We still get young boys involved in gangs coming in. Child sex exploitation is kind of focused on girls, though it can happen to anybody. It can happen to young boys, it can happen to young girls. But with young lads now, we do see a lot of, it's called county lines, where they'll be moved from the area that they were born in because they haven't got a stable background.
Yeah.
And they'll be shipped to like the countryside to sell drugs, and they're just completely missed by the system.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they'll be involved in gangs and they come into clinic and, you know, you do walk away sometimes. And, you know, I've got nieces and nephews who are like 14, and I've just seen a 14-year-old child who is involved in gangs, and it is hard, but
must feel just helpless in those situations.
You do, but you don't, because there is so much out there for us to do. So anybody who comes into our clinic, anybody under the age of 18 is screened basically for child sex exploitation and safeguarding issues. So safeguarding issues might be the boyfriend's a bit too old, the girlfriend's a bit too old, they're taking drugs, they're doing things that really at that age isn't appropriate. And we can contact so many organisations that are really, like, we're experts in like sexual health and healthy relationships, but there's so many amazing people out there who are experts on runaway children, young people that are involved in gangs, young people involved in substance abuse.
Yeah.
And we really do work together, don't we? And it's just when we all come together, they've suddenly gone from having no support to having this amazing support network behind them. So it's hard, because you wouldn't want anybody to live through that, let alone a young person.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we're so highly trained and we've got so many amazing resources that we can make such a big difference.
Ladies of Liverpool, do you see much of that in our own city?
Yeah, we do. And I think that's where our education team really comes in, because when we see people in clinic, that's fantastic. But a lot of people who are in those positions might not feel comfortable enough to come into clinic.
Yeah. And in a time where we've got many people going to food banks to survive, which is such a sad state of affairs, isn't it? But that's what we're living through at the moment. And you've got these children who will do any of these things either for love, for money, for attention, you know, and I'm sure it's gone on through the ages.
Yeah.
But in Liverpool, what are we doing to tackle this?
I think one of the key things is talking to young people about how it works. Talking to them, getting them to understand that, you know, it's not something that just happens on TV, that it does happen sort of in our everyday lives, and that a lot of the time those young people who are victims of CSE probably don't realise that that's what's happening, because they've been groomed in such a way that they believe what's happening to them is something that's beneficial to them, and that those people do love them, or that they're in a relationship with that person. And actually, those young people present, you know, they don't all the time want our help in those situations. It might be that we as professionals recognise what's happening from the things that they're saying, and it can be quite hard to sort of work with them to get that support in place, but that's something that we do really work hard at to make sure that we keep those young people safe. And it is awful that it's happening on our doorstep.
It's so sad. Another thing I was reading up about before you came in, by coincidence, was a lot of this, when you were talking earlier about gangs, this gang initiation process, which must bleed into your area of expertise, where you've got, you know, to be part of the gang, you have to sleep with four other members of the gang. And and this is all true. This is what's actually going on.
Yeah, it is. It's something that, you know, we see not loads, like Imogen was saying before. I think the media would like to make it out that it's happening to every young person, and you know, it isn't as common as maybe some people might think, but it does happen. You know, young people are pressured into doing things for protection because they don't feel protected by you know, the systems that we've got in place. They feel like the only protection that they can get is from these gangs that are out there. And it is just heartbreaking to see it happen. But hopefully through sort of organisations like ours and the close relationships that we have with other organisations in the city and across the country, we can put that safety network in place for them.
So in-house in the Brook, you've got a waiting room filled with people of all ages, up to 25. So the youngest you would imagine to see, waiting to see you then, Imogen?
Probably, I'd say 13 to 14.
So that's when they start coming through to you.
I mean, we have had younger people, but there's obviously there's laws in place. We have to work within legal frameworks. So anybody under the age of 13 can't consent to sex.
That's right.
So if you are 13 and under, we have to go down a completely different route. And it's so rare. I think I've seen one in the 7 years that I've worked
in
Brook.
It's tough, isn't it? Because you've got to be 16 to have sex. But in real life, they're not waiting until they're 16. And you've got to try and keep them safe and give them advice. All within the boundaries of the legal system. So that's a challenge in itself.
It is, but like, so you have to be legally 16 to have sex. But if you are, so we, when you come into clinic, if you're under 16, there's these guidelines called the Fraser guidelines, that if you are understanding what we say to you, you can retain that information, you're emotionally mature, and we think you're going to do it anyway, then we can do, we can give you contraceptive or sexual health advice or a test without informing your parents or your legal guardian, because it's beneficial for you. You're going to do it anyway. We might as well do it in a safe environment and confidentially, that, you know, we're going to, you're going to come back to us. So it is hard, and, you know, you do have to make sure that there's like an emotional intelligence there, that they know what they're getting themselves into. They understand what they're saying, that it's all appropriate. Like we said before, we safeguard every single young person that comes in to make sure that they are having appropriate relationships. You know, if there's 2 14-year-olds, and, you know, it's not the best, and I'm sure a lot of mums listen to this, but I don't want my 14-year-old having sex, don't care about emotionally intelligent. Unfortunately, it happens. It's happened since day dot. And if we weren't here, it would happen. They wouldn't be protected. They wouldn't have anywhere else to go to talk about.
It's funny, is it? Because I was 17 when I lost my virginity, and I ended up marrying him, and we've got 2 kids. So my situation is, you know, quite rare in real life, isn't it? So I just remember looking back at all the opportunities where I could have had sex, but I was nowhere near ready. I can't even imagine being under 16 and being like, woohoo, you know, confident enough to do anything like that, you know. Even just wearing a bikini and stuff at that age is traumatic, isn't it, in a public place. So you must come across so many different characters. And different scenarios. Can you give us a little list then of everything people will come into the Brook for?
Yeah, of course. So obviously we do pretty much every contraception there is out there. So that's like your pill, injections, coils, implants. Then we also do testing. So we do pregnancy testing.
Mm-hmm.
We do referrals for terminations of pregnancy, or we can give advice on pregnancy. If you want to continue that pregnancy, we can tell you where to go, if to go to your GP. We also do counselling.
Mm-hmm.
We do sexual health testing, so chlamydia testing, HIV testing, syphilis testing. And then we do treatment for STIs as well. So if you have contracted a sexually transmitted infection, you can come into the Brook. We'll give you the correct medication, call you back for another test to make sure that the medication's worked. And some people just come in just for a chat more than anything.
It's nice because, you know, when you think of your GP, I was with my GP from birth.
Yeah.
So you know them.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as they're great for tonsillitis,
yeah.
If you're a young person who's scared that they've contracted some kind of transmitted disease, to go and sit with the old fella who also treats your mum and your dad and everybody mm-hmm. else, to know that there's another place you can go,
It's
just priceless, isn't it? Where you can go, you can speak to people like yourselves who are just grounded, normal, you know, people who... You're quite young. How old are you both?
I'm 23.
Yeah.
And I'm 27.
So perfect for the people who are coming through those doors. Yeah. They can relate to you and they're probably going to open up a little bit more to you. So thank you for coming in just to lend your voices to anyone who just might need it at this time. You don't know. So taking it from the Brook itself into the schools, mm-hmm. which I know is Lucy's domain.
Yes.
How do you go in and speak to schools? Is it a case of, right, here's a whiteboard, let's all come up with words that we call our maybes or whatever? Because that's what I remember mm-hmm. when people came into our school. What do you actually do?
So we do absolutely tons of different stuff in schools. It all depends on what kind of schools feel that their young people need. But key in that is that we have really, really good relationships with most of the schools on Merseyside. So that's mm-hmm. across the Wirral and Liverpool.
Yeah.
We work really closely with them to kind of support what needs they think their young people have. But a lot of the time, we're talking about the basics of sexual health, because it's information that young people don't get.
Yeah.
There's been a huge lack of relationships and sex education for years and years now.
Yeah.
We've really concentrated in the last few years on campaigning to get RSE as part of the curriculum, and that's finally happened. So from next year, as most people will know now, it's going to be compulsory in schools.
That's so topical, isn't it?
Education,
at the moment.
Yeah.
So it'll be actually part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
You must know about the dangers, about, you know, just how it works and what's going on with your body and what you mm-hmm. should be doing with it and what mm-hmm. maybe you shouldn't be doing with it.
Yeah.
So you go into the young to the schools with the young people. Mm-hmm. And I bet you have to overcome, first of all, the laughing and the jokes.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly what you would do. You know, you can't blame the kids. They're going to put their hands up and they're going to say stupid things.
Mm.
Once you break through that, mm-hmm. do you find you see a big difference in the behaviour and the way they're managing what you're telling them?
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing that sort of happens is a lot of the time we'll go in and everyone's really, really nervous. They don't want to say anything. They're super giggly about things.
Yeah.
Or we get the opposite end of the spectrum where people are trying to throw out the most controversial questions they can to try and shake you.
Give us one. What's something that has maybe made you go,
sorts of things. Like
Blue waffle.
That's the one that we get the most.
That haunts us, that pit, and it is not a real pizza.
Some people might know what Blue Waffle is.
Google it.
At your own risk, Google it. But it looks like it's some kind of infection in ladies' genitals, and it's gone blue and it looks like a waffle.
Yeah.
So you have to tell them that's not real.
Yeah, and it's haunted us since the second it came out.
Was a thing, because that was out when I was a kid, you know, Blue Waffle.
It's still... to this day.
Yeah. Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool. Everything for ladies.
Definitely. Did you hand out pictures of scary stuff?
No, not anymore.
That's the good stuff. Bring that back. I think that's why I didn't have sex till I was nearly 18.
Yeah.
I think it was those pictures I was shown.
Yeah, so like we tended to find that those pictures really put young people off, and like that's not what we're there for. We're not there to terrify them.
Mm.
We're there to kind of give them the
information.
Really?
That was going to be my approach with my kids. Should I not be doing that? This is what's going to happen. Never take those metal underpants off.
I mean, if you want to scare your kids, then yeah, great.
That really was going to be my my tactic.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why we don't do it is because if young people become scared of like sex and relationships, then it kind of pushes it underground a little bit more. Yeah.
You're right.
They don't want to talk to people about it.
We joke, but it is natural.
Yeah,
and they're going to have the feelings and they're going to want to do it.
Definitely.
And it's just managing that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I wanted to talk to you about as well? I was reading something about re-educating the young people on sex, because a lot of them are getting the sex ed, because it wasn't in school, from porn.
Yeah.
Now, these porn videos are quite aggressive from what you see and what I was reading. It's not sex. It is not sex. So I was looking online, it clicked, send you to a link, and it wasn't videos, but it was screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
And as a 38-year-old woman, I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is what young people are led to believe. This is what sex is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go into too much detail, but, you know, making people physically sick is a thing. That's quite popular in porn now.
Yeah. I think porn is... It's an extreme, isn't it? You know, like, if you watch any film, everything's an extreme.
Mm.
And, you know, we get... young people coming in who've seen porn videos and they don't understand that it's edited, that they aren't filmed in real time, that these people can do the things that they're seeing on screen because it is edited and they've had time and stuff. So we've had young people coming in, especially like about anal sex. Anal sex is a big one in porn.
Mm.
And I think people think they have to be doing that's you know,
that's part of the whole
doing, but
routine.
They're not educated on it. They're not educated on, you know, it looks like they just do it dead easily, and then when it doesn't happen dead easily for the young people, they come in and they have all these like negative feelings about themselves because they don't look like a porn star, basically, because they're not hairless with big boobs and a big bum, and the fellas haven't got like big muscles and stuff like that, and that's not what the new a human body looks like. Some do, but across the range, you know, there's women with different body types, there's men with different body types, there's...
Well, your bits don't look the same as anyone else's bits, do they? Everyone's bits look different.
No.
And you have these chats and you think sometimes, like me and my mates will sit round and we go, we should go into schools and we should tell the kids what we know now that we didn't know. Because my group of mates are the same group of mates I've had when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So we've gone through the whole journey together and most of us have become mothers as well. And we laugh about how our bits look different. I didn't give birth naturally, I had C-sections, but some of my mates who did give birth naturally, and after a few drinks and they get really graphic and you're talking about it, you think, this is real life. You know, people need to know this. Of course, porn stars won't have bits that look different than they used to look. You know, so it is this false belief that you've got to look like what's on TV or Instagram, and it's across the board. But it's when it becomes like violent, these porn videos, things like that I was reading, I thought, oh, this is terrifying.
You know,
do we rely on mums and dads to sit and tell the teenage boys and girls? That's not what goes on, you know?
I mean, it's really hard, isn't it? Because we, you know, might not feel comfortable having those conversations with our kids, and our kids probably aren't going to feel comfortable having those conversations with us, let's be honest.
How did you two find out about sex?
Well, I was lucky enough to have the Brooke come in to my school. So, it's really funny that, like, it's kind of come full circle. Yeah. Now I'm that person who gets to go and talk to young people.
Yeah.
I was really lucky that I had, like, good sex education when I was younger. But, like, most other people that I know definitely found out about it through, like, rumours, through whispers, through, like, looking up the word sex in the dictionary and stuff like that, and not really understanding what those words meant. And,
And you share a lot at that age, don't you, as well? So you're going through all these embarrassing things and you do tell who you think are your best mates.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a hard thing, isn't it? Because then they're feeling insecure about themselves, so they'll go and tell your story to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a lot of that when we were growing up.
Yeah.
How did you find out about sex
and gym? I was even luckier than Lucy in that my mum is the senior nurse of Brooke.
You were spoiled?
Yeah, so my mum has worked in Brooke for 19 years now. So most of my life I've grown up in Brooke, and my mum and dad luckily never hid anything from me.
Yeah.
So I'd go into Brooke, I knew what Brooke was, I knew why people were there, back when my mum started, we had protesters outside Birkenhead Brook.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. We had people offering girls leaflets on how married sex is clean sex and unmarried sex is dirty sex. And they
and
sent,
this is what, like 10 years ago maybe?
Yeah, they sent letters to the nurses' houses. There was bomb threats. There was all sorts of... I grew up every Saturday going to Brook because my mum didn't have a babysitter.
Yeah.
And sitting in one of the offices, walking past these protesters, they must have thought I was a devil child going there at 6 years old. Every Saturday. But I was so lucky that I had that. And then obviously, because my mum's mates all worked at Brook and I had the education workers, you know, who I saw as like my aunties and uncles.
Yeah.
So from day dot, so my friends have always come to me going, can you ask your mum what this is?
Well, your mum's always had one of those paper bags with condoms in them, hasn't she?
Oh, God. Yeah.
To dish out.
She's like on call 24/7. Yeah. Until I got this job, she was on call 24/7 for my friends growing up. So we were really lucky.
Yeah.
But then, like, my husband, his mum and dad, you know, didn't grow up in that, and he went to a Catholic school. He didn't have sex education. When we talk about sex education, he's like, I didn't even know that. And he's like 20. He's like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, what do you mean you didn't know it worked like that? He's like, no, because he wasn't taught it. And that's like so important now.
It's a shame, isn't it? It depends on what school you went to and how they believed it should be dealt with.
Or shouldn't be dealt with.
Yeah.
There's massive, like, now that it's compulsory from primary school. So we go in and we do inclusive sex education. I always say it wrong. Relationship and sex education.
There you go.
So
from what age?
Five.
From five?
Yeah, so I think people are a bit terrified that we're going to be going in and telling five-year-olds how to have sex and things, and that is not what is going to be happening at all.
Let me guess, is it about, you know, keeping them safe, about these are your parts?
And friendships, it's relationships. So we talk about, you know, the different families that you might see on the school playground, why somebody's got two daddies and why somebody's only got a mummy, or why someone's being brought up by the grandparents. Yeah. So it's inclusive, because from the age of five, children aren't born with boundaries. They aren't born with a prejudice.
No.
So if we can teach them from that really developmental, amazing age where they just kind of soak everything up like a sponge, like Lucy said, we're not going in explicitly talking about sex.
Right.
We're talking about how to share your toys, about consent, about saying, yeah, you can play with me, no, you can't play with me, about the different people you'll see in the street, about the different feelings you'll have towards people. And then it builds from there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think it is also really important, like you say, about teaching them about their private parts.
Yeah.
And that's something that happens already in schools.
Yeah.
Like the NSPCC have got a really, really good campaign called the Pants Are Private campaign.
Yeah.
That's been going for years and years. So we're not doing anything that's kind of totally different from that.
And I think you're right, because only now I've got a five-year-old and I've got a nine-year-old. And my nine-year-old has started a lot more... He uses a lot more now words like balls, penis.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it with a look in his eye to see what I say.
Yeah.
So, yes, he's doing it for a laugh. He's doing it as a joke. But obviously, in the classroom, these words now are starting to get thrown about. And we're in denial if we think it doesn't happen until they're 13.
Yeah.
Come 9, 10, they're starting to talk about stuff. So I'll say to my lad, right or wrong, I don't know, we'll have a joke. And I'll be like, tell you what, we'll be getting in the shower. And I'll go, now remember, have a good wash and do this, that and the other. And let me know if you see any hairs.
Yeah.
And he searches desperately for them. He's desperate to have like a hair under his armpit like his dad. Or on his chest or whatever. And for me, that's my way of letting him know change is good. It's to be expected.
Yeah.
Don't be shocked at anything that might happen to your body. That's my way of dealing with it. So to know people like yourselves are going into schools and not going, this is sex and you put your penis in a woman's vagina. We no one wants that for the nine-year-old.
No.
But just so they feel comfortable in their own skin and what they're hearing, to get some clarification from a professional.
Exactly.
It's
and
got
I think
to be
that's
good.
The most important thing is making sure that they've got good, accurate information. Because like we said before, like, there's so many whispers on the playground. If one young person's found out something, they're going to tell all their friends.
Yeah.
And it's better coming from somebody who's a professional, who has all the accurate information, just to dispel all those myths that we do hear and that we've heard for years and years. Because they are going to find out about it.
Yeah, of course.
And even though...
And we're not telling them to do it. Just telling them this is what happens.
Yeah, and we tend to find that actually if young people have all that information, they can make better choices for themselves. Yeah. So actually they're less likely to engage in like risky relationships
mm-hmm.
because they understand what is healthy and that actually it's okay if like I wait a little bit longer mm-hmm. and I should be waiting until I do feel ready.
Yeah.
It's not okay for people to pressure me into these things.
Yeah. Girls, you've been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in.
That's
fine. And anytime you want to come in and talk about anything else, if you sat in the office and you go, that would be great on the podcast, let me know. We'll get you in as little regulars.
Oh,
I'd love
Thank
to see you,
you
both again. Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.